Okay, I am Annalise Finney. I'm recording this interview with Maya Reed for the Oral History Summer School Education Narratives Project. Today is Wednesday, August 19th, 2020, and I'm in Oakland, California.
Hi, my name is Maya Reed. Hi, Annalise. I live in Hudson, New York, 2.5 hours north of New York City. I'm right now in my home in my kitchen, which serves as my office these days. So luckily, it's a place I love to be. And my role in education is that I'm an early educator care provider. That is what I have titled myself. I care for infants into their toddler years, beginning as early as the family feels comfortable having me connect. I would do it from day one. Often the earliest I've begun with a family is with a child who is 3 weeks old. Because of the nature of the work and other factors, I go into people's homes, into families' homes, and care for the infant there. As I work for multiple families, couple days a week here, a couple days a week there. As the children get older, I invite the opportunity for families to have me care for their children together, which offers children the opportunity to begin socializing. It offers then families to have more time of care with me. It's just a really, and it also to me, it brings families together and creating support systems between families is really important to me. It was important in my life as a parent that you have created a community around yourself, not only for your children, but for yourself as adults and yourselves as parents. And this past year, I actually had for the first time an opportunity to begin caring for two infants together, doing share care of two infants. Until this year, I didn't feel in a place where I really had a sense of how I could do that. And so I had 2 4-month-old babies twice a week together, and that was amazing. And then everything, of course, stopped with COVID. So that is the work that I do and a little bit about how I do it. Because I'm working by myself, I have been able to be part of either beginning, or I've been able to enter into communities of early educators who get together, especially once a month, so that we can all be in the room and be asking questions and having conversations and thinking together, learning new things together about our field, and then also having an annual conference where some of us actually are able to lead workshops for other educators, not just early care, but other educators in the region. So that has been really important to me being able to do what I do in the way that I do it, and also help me not get stifled or in a rut. It helps me really continue to have opportunities to grow and develop my practice. Which is critical to just the person I am. And I think all people benefit from those opportunities, as well as the people around them benefit from the opportunities of people having personal growth. I believe that right now, as I'm talking about that work, I can also say that this year has also been an interesting year, because As I mentioned in the last interview, I was appointed youth commissioner of the city of Hudson, where I live, which was a really, continues to be a great honor. I've lived in this community for almost 20 years, and I have to say, I keep learning more and more about my community. And when you get to work in community, it allows you to just sort of have a deeper understanding of the place you live, and maybe again, give that out to the people around you. Maybe they have a deeper understanding of you. And I just, so that's been very interesting, not only to be thinking about a community of children and families, and what that is to Hudson, and to be trying to figure out how best to serve the community and organizations and families in the town. But then again, with COVID, how that kind of brought us all up, to this sort of screeching halt, to having to think about things in very different ways and be doing very different things. And now again, as reopening of states and communities, and now a work is happening and beginning, it's a whole set of new conversations or expanded conversations and considerations. I don't think anything is getting any more clear or any easier. It's just very interesting right now.
What has happened for you since you last spoke with this project?
I am curious. I spoke in July. So what has changed is that I have settled into the care of almost all of my families, except for one that I was caring for pre-COVID. And that has been really nice. It's been very interesting because a big part of the work that I do is to sort of manage how much I need to be in and working directly with the children, and where I need to just be able to step away from them and allow them to be doing their work or having their own personal interactions without me being in the mix. And it puts me in the place of observer and studier. You know, I apologize.
It's okay.
That was my phone. I was using it to block my face so that I can just talk without being distracted by my face.
I know, that's hard.
I think I'll just, excuse me, I'll put up a different thing other than my phone there.
That's okay.
Okay. So I'm observing children not only coming back and being with me, children that I've been with for 3 to 4 years on a weekly basis, and caring for it individually and as a little cohort, but they too, for the most part, have been fairly isolated from one another and from other children in these 3, 4, 5, 6 months now. So I'm observing how they're coming together. Last week was the first week that all three of my almost four-year-olds were together again, and it was really interesting to watch them sort of really getting on really fine at the beginning, really curious, comfortable. And then the first day back was really so much bickering. Like, it was almost like they had to reestablish who they were in a group, in that social dynamic that was familiar and comfortable to them. And also now as children who are not 3 or 3 and a half, but are now, 6 months older and at that age in very different developmental stage. As you head into 4 and become 4, that is really where you're sort of sensing sort of full autonomy for the first time. And so, you know, all of a sudden they're like feeling their full autonomous selves, but together. So it's just like, wait, I'm going to do that. No, I'm going to do that. Wait, oh, you're going to do that? I want to do that. You know, it's just like sort of like, and so it's been to me a lot of like, okay, like how much of this do they just need to be able to try to work through? And then at what point do I step in and try to support them figuring out those issues that they may be having and disagreements? So yeah, and then by, you know, the second day, they were in a much better place. There was much less of that bickering. And so I'm curious about, you know, the next few weeks together, you know, what I'm going to be observing, but sort of that separation and isolation definitely impacted them. The other thing that has changed for me is that group of three children are going to be heading off in September to school together, to another school. And there is one sibling who's heading in, almost a toddler, who I will be caring for in the fall. But I had anticipated having like the other child that had been with him in the fall. I anticipated that I would have at least those two, and that I had just encountered another family with a child about that age and was beginning to have conversations about getting those three together so that in the fall I would have these three sort of 1.5-year-olds and that we would be growing together. And then subsequently another baby was born into this family. So that potential of work, but COVID has made it, has sort of created a disturbance to that plan, just in terms of how, what can I say, that bringing back that pod is difficult in that one family has been able to be very isolated, is having to think about like family members who have possibly chronic, you know, health issues that they're dealing with, or are compromised immune systems and that sort of thing. And that this bringing back another child or two other children, who are they connected to? Have they been able to experience or have the same kind of sort of isolation practices that this other family has been able to and has had to do? And the risks of bringing children that age who are still putting things in their mouth, who are still getting close to one another and sharing things that were in mouths, and you know. So it's been these very difficult conversations about, can we provide care? Can we open ourselves up? We don't feel comfortable. What are the possibilities? What could it look like? Really putting out like every possible scenario, the preferred one, and just continuing to investigate. And my personal feeling of wanting to be able to care for this one family that I've been with for 4 years, and this little 1.5-year-old who's been very isolated from other children in his early life, which has its own ramifications. And then wanting to also be available to provide care to these other families who are essential workers, nurses, teachers, you know, because it's very hard for them now to be finding care for their very young children. Because nursery schools often don't start caring for children until they're 2 or 3, usually 3. So finding care for these very young children when parents have to go back to work, it's just, it pulls on your heartstrings and it confuses the mind, you know? So I have to say that that's where I am really trying to resolve that in my own mind and heart. And I've done so much just writing to work it out, because I don't really, I can't put all of it on the families. I have to do my own work, and I don't have really other colleagues or work partners or to suss these bigger problems out. So it's been really, I'd say, very overwhelming. When I feel like I just am like, I just don't know the answer. Somebody just tell me. And I realize nobody can tell me the answer. Finding the place of courage to have the next conversation that doesn't feel comfortable. The process has been very interesting. It just means being in constant conversation and constantly thinking with a bigger group than I've ever had to do as an independent contractor. So that's been a new experience. And so I'm learning the gifts of working things out with a larger group of people. It was something that I wasn't comfortable in. And just finding the trust to think and then speak to these things and hear, and that's how answers often can be found. So I feel very young in that I'm learning this now as a sort of older person.
Is there anyone that you're looking to for leadership at this time?
I feel that I can't say that there is anyone that I would say has been able to really position themselves in that way, just because it's so hard to do it. I would say the person probably, the people that are doing it for me are that our new mayor has, I feel, done an incredible job of keeping the avenues of conversation open and clear, and also giving a structure so that those very important conversations are happening among sort of department heads and who are having to make decisions and do the work in the city. So we have a forum, it was weekly and now it's biweekly, to just be saying, this is what we're doing, this is how it's happening. It's a place for questions, it's a place for feedback. So I feel like that has been, and we also then know what's going on citywide. So for me, having that big picture understanding helps doing sort of the more specific work. The other people that I feel I'm looking to watching as leaders are people who are actually having to make similar decisions to me, but actually, I don't know, I don't want to say, maybe they're bigger, is that they are directors of daycare centers, or they are, that they are having to sort of create sort of safety specifications and structures that are very new, and communicate those out to a broader audience of parents, having to keep larger groups of children safe. So I'm really looking to them in how they're thinking about sort of this on a bigger scale, and how it helps me kind of bring that back to the smaller work that I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything about how you've responded to having to do those negotiations in your childcare work that has surprised you?
That it is constant, the amount of thinking time and preparing to communicate. I don't know if it's surprising in that it's new to me, right? It's new that this is really what it takes, and it also is, again, I don't know if it's surprising, but new is then how to manage some downtime, to stop the mind, to collect oneself, to sort of go on a vacation, you know, of the mind. What little thing do you do is that actually socializing, making, saying yes to having dinner or seeing someone for an hour or two multiple times during the week, is so much, is critical to, again, being able to come back into a thinking and working space where I might have sort of protected my private space, because in order to maybe go into a studio and have time to work on my own art, you know, I have often felt that I've been very protective of my private time, and would always socialize, but everything was a little more considered and managed. And so, yeah, I think what's surprising me is that the fact that I didn't know how really, really, truly the connection to friends and family was essential to us or me being okay. And I think there was a sort of, when things were just humming along, one could sort of think that one could just take that time and that, oh, I'm fine on my own. Or maybe this is probably just very personal. I'm fine on my own and I love my friends and I want to make time for them. And it's critical actually to us as a species, I think. And I'm getting to really see that. Mm-hmm.
What have those social visits looked like for you?
Very one-on-one, that's who I am, I feel like. But also because that idea of assembling in groups is not preferred right now or as possible. So it's just been really, if somebody asks, if we say, we need to get together, it's not, yeah, let's figure out when. It's like, I'm looking at my calendar now. What day? Okay, that's good. I'm going to put it in. Anything changes, let us know. And then just saying that, and then making time for it, you know, just sort of. Anticipating it. And yeah, so I think that that's what it looks like. It's just making those dates right away and showing up. and making space for it to be just the listening. I think the listening part of it is just being, you know, there's so much I need to hear from you about how you're doing and how you're doing this, you know, to know how you are and to also help paint a picture of where we are that relates to where I am, you know. I think that so far that's what I'm getting also back from everybody that I'm with. It's like, how are you? What are you doing? You know? Big long check-ins, but with good food is, so it's food has always been a part of it, no question, but food and a good bottle of wine. Food, wine, and time.
I'm curious, this is a very specific question, I guess, but is everyone bringing their own food? Do you share food? How are you navigating your kind of concern for yourself and for others in those interactions?
So I'm mostly, it's a really good question that is often asked. So there's always a lot of checking in. The people that I am socializing with, the friends, I think we already have a sense of one another. And so if I'm hosting, you know, I'm just like, I'll make the food. And I feel like at this point, if anybody is uncomfortable with that, Right. Are you comfortable with that? Always that question. I feel like we're checking in kind of with not assuming anything anymore, right? I'm happy to make dinner, you know. I can bring something if you'd like. So there are always these questions which offer the opportunity to be like, I'm not so comfortable with that. And so there is sharing. And there is always that thing of, we've already been talking about like how this has affected our own safety protocols that we're doing in our own lives. So, you know, so that idea of like expressing that comes up too. And yeah, and we always, somehow we're all entering with a face mask, and then we're all saying, are you comfortable with the masks? Are you comfortable with not having masks and keeping like a respectable distance and space from one another? You know, having hand sanitizer clearly on the table and available, you know, and just sort of, yeah. So it's not quite normal because there isn't the hugging, you know, and the usual greeting, and that loss of touch is really an interesting new issue. And I'd say that also comes up, you know, I work with very young children, and so there is touch and there is holding. And so that communication with families, that this is how I remain as safe to you as possible. So how do I take care of my own safety, and how does it, and checking in. And so with the families, we've decided that not having masks is fine, but that was a decision that we came to. And that, you know, if a young child comes up to me and lifts up their arms saying to me, pick me up, connecting with the parent first and say, how do you feel about this? You know, and then me checking in with myself, how do I feel about it? And moving forward, like these little tiny baby steps of talking out each question. And then also that big, and we don't know, right? We don't know how this could come into any of our lives. And this, the pseudo security of knowing that we do have these pretty stringent practices in our own lives is having to support that.
Yeah. I'm curious about your work as the youth commissioner, and I'm wondering how that has changed over the last month.
It has changed in the way that it has changed is that we were following very closely. The youth department in town has programs at the youth center during the year, during sort of the school year, and then come summer, they take their whole operation down to this lovely little lake of quite a few blocks away where there's a beach house. And they run a summer camp that serves about 200 kids in town. And it's a free summer camp, and it's on a lake, and we have lifeguards. So all the children get swimming lessons, and there are meals provided, and then all of these other programs. And so we shut down serving children sort of that middle of March and began providing food to the community, to a little over 200 families. We were getting food to twice a week. That became the youth department's work and mission, is to make sure that families had food and residents in Hudson had food. And then we were following the reopening strategy by the governor. And early in the spring, we thought, oh, well, there's just not going to be any summer camp on top of not having had programs. And we were deeply concerned about the youth in the community. And then as reopening started and then it began accelerating, we're like, oh my God, like they are saying yes to day camps. Oh my goodness. So what happened was just really committing to being a part of a support system for the youth department staff and the director to do what they had to do to create what was going to be a very different way of serving the youth of Hudson and what could it look like. And so we did all that work, and then we opened it and we started something completely new that we hadn't had any experience doing. So it was just, it was brand new. We're having to watch everything really closely and deal with things that were unexpected. And it's just, and now that the programming is coming to an end, working, you know, again, weekly staff meetings, that's what I have to go to after this conversation, is participating in these weekly staff meetings so I can know how they're doing and know if there's a place that I can offer support in order for them to keep going. And so they're really right now using...
Okay, we lost each other there briefly because of some technical errors. But Maya, you had been in the middle of describing how the youth department has been dealing with the transition from the end of this kind of summer camp that came together in what sounds like a kind of new and potentially exciting way into the fall.
Yes, so I think I was mentioning that it's very much like the schools, is that how do we serve the children? How do we serve the youth now that there are all of these sort of new protocols that are, you know, being determined by the state and also, you know, our city, keeping our city safe as well. It's a small community and we have one hospital that serves a big area. So we're like, that's the other, always that consideration is that it's our responsibility to keep our citizens safe, and as well as like a whole county and a whole state and a whole country. And, so the staff really realizing and knowing that they're going to be using what they learned and picking apart sort of like the details of what worked and what didn't this summer in order to create again, like this next new style of programming within the youth center, because it's the winter months and what can that look like? And also remote learning, and also recognizing that the students are going to be needing even more help because of how schools are going to be reopening and what they're going to be able to give or not give to the students. And that there are different kinds of learners, and some students are really going to be struggling more and needing that extra support, and that families are really hard pressed. So really looking at our role in community as having always been important and served a purpose, I feel like we're really getting to give voice to the value of a youth department in a community to its youngest citizens, and really realizing that it's a community's responsibility to also help be supporting the family and how that care happens. And so I think we're very excited about how to be expressing that also to the bigger community, that youth departments are really, really important in so many ways. And we've been able to do that. We've been able to show it through food. We've been able to show it through creating different kinds of programming this summer to support youth who were not getting in many other summer camp opportunities. So that's been great. And then also we have a daycare center in our city that serves infants through 3 and 4 year olds. And they shut down in partnership with the city back in March in this effort, again, to keep the community safe and their own small community and our larger community safe. And they've just reopened. So I've been all through the spring and summer in communication weekly or biweekly with their director about how they were doing and about the possibility of reopening and the viability of reopening at a time when in this country, I believe the number is about 50% of daycares are not going to be able to reopen, not only because of the financial loss they experienced during COVID, but also, again, the limitations on how many children you can have now will affect the income coming into a center and being able to cover expenses of salaries and facilities and all those sorts of things. So it's really connects to a conversation that we've been having in the early educator sort of group that meets is how care is understood in this country, both of the youngest and of the oldest, and that care is aligned and entwined with education. Best education also has care involved in it. But how do we, care is critical. We need to be creating spaces of care and providing financial support to the people who care that is fair and speaks to the value and importance of giving care to especially the youngest and the oldest populations. So I feel that this work that I'm getting to do in tandem with the daycare center is really, really compounding what I already knew to be true and we were already talking about. It becomes this thing where I'm just like, we've got to even propel this forward more now. This is our opportunity, because in order to open up economically, we cannot harm the children. We have to care for them. We have to care for them even better than we have been. And we have to care for the carers. So I'm really thinking a lot about that and beginning to have conversations around the city with other organizations that are providing, either provide care or who are also interested in possibly supporting ways of addressing this better in the future. So it's kind of opened me up to really being in a place where I'm getting to talk about something that I already know in my heart, but that I'm impassioned about, and this idea of possibly new changes in this realm.
How has it felt to you to be in a leadership role since we last spoke?
I'm seeing myself coming into it in a clearer way than I had when I talked earlier in the summer. By necessity, I have had to be in these conversations, and I have been able to see the benefit of the conversations, and also realize that they're not as scary places that I thought they would be. And also that, you know, I because I work alone so much, and I've had lots of thoughts and I've had lots of writings about this thinking and these beliefs, the opportunity to give voice to it and speak to it, I haven't had that before. So again, it's a new space for me to kind of practice something that hadn't been practiced before. And it's exciting to really be able to connect, you know, these 10 years of early childhood focus and thinking and imaginings about ideal worlds and ways of possibly getting there. It's so, I guess, exciting now to be able to realize that I have a better voice to speak to it, and that there is often an ear to listen to it, actually, and that it can become a conversation. Mm-hmm. And for me, if there can be a conversation, then that can lead to work being done, hopefully.
Something that struck me about what you said in your interview with Noah was how important it is for young children and for anyone developing to be seen. And I'm curious, who do you feel like is seeing you right now in the position that you're in and as you're growing?
Lots of other city officials. Some of whom I know, I've known for years, and some of whom are new to me. So I feel like the visibility right now is in that realm. And it's starting, so my community, but at a level of people who are doing and making changes in the community, or have that that charge, you know, they've been elected to represent their constituency, and so that is on to one degree like this new level of audience. I'm very much a one-on-one person, so I feel, you know, that I have one-on-one conversations as much as possible and keep conversations to small groups, because I feel like I can see that group and I can know where I am in place and where my conversation is going and whose ears it's landing on. I have a sense. But it's definitely beginning to broaden. It did hit social media at one point this summer, because around the park that has the beach that the youth center occupies in the summer, but that year round is also a public park with a basketball court and playground and beach and skateboard park, that there was some real traffic road issues around safety and children, pedestrians accessing that park, and especially children on their own or families. And so I had years ago suggested there be a stop sign at an intersection that was missing a stop sign at one point. Like there was one place where they could just come up a hill and go over without stopping, but everybody else at the intersection had to stop, but there was a blind spot. And so actually navigating that intersection was kind of perilous on many levels. So as pedestrians, as cars turning across into that intersection, across that intersection. And so for years I had been sort of addressing this, because I cared for a child in that neighborhood and walked to that beach with that child and experienced as a pedestrian, like how difficult it could be. And also as someone who drove across that intersection with this child in my car, that if I didn't see, if there was a car in that blind spot coming up that hill that didn't have to stop and I was turning it across, the child in my car would be the one who got hit. So I had like all of these personal experiences as a care provider of a child, mm-hmm. to speak to this. And then as well now as the youth commissioner, that there are children using this, there are families using this. And so we were able to actually get that into place and got the stop sign up as well as crosswalks on either side of the entrance to the park. And then I saw on social media, like lots of people And then, of course, like somebody who is saying, oh, well, what's going to happen in the winter? You know, because it's on a hill. You know, we have to stop, you know, and somebody saying, well, why now? You know, why all of a sudden? So having to speak to that in a public way is something that I'm happy to do. But it is also something that as my own person, the person I am, I feel uncomfortable with. So being more public, I realize, is something that I still am not comfortable with in my life. But it's a place that I would like, there could be no other place that I would rather exercise that place of growth and development than in my own community. Because it's backed by so much genuine care. I'm not an elected official. I would never be an elected official. I was appointed, so I'm not vying for any political, you know, anything by thinking about and requesting actions and changes. I really am thinking outside of myself as much as possible. Like, I'm really thinking about if I were putting myself in other people's shoes as much as possible. So.
I just want to do a quick time check. We have about 20 minutes left before our agreed upon stopping time. But I wanted to ask, how are you feeling about the next 3 months ahead?
I am feeling today very optimistic. I'm sorry, the phone is ringing.
That's okay. Do you want to just wait until it's done or grab it?
I'm going to see if I can stop it.
Sure.
Have that phone so I can have internet. And so it's only spam. It's never anybody, or, you know, it's never anybody I need to talk to. So yeah, as of yesterday and today, feeling more optimistic in that, in terms of directions that my own personal work is, I feel like it's we're coming into like what my work is going to look like beginning in September, that I've been able, with conversation with other families, been able to sort of rule out certain options, but also hear what they're able to find, since I can't be a part of that care. So I feel optimistic in that we're all kind of working together in figuring out what, and we're getting closer to what fall is going to be just through the work that we're doing. And I feel optimistic in what I'll be able to provide for this 1-year-and-a-half-year-old who has not, like, just my dedicated time with him. Right now I'm doing sibling care, so I'm caring for him and his 4-year-old sister, which has been wonderful. But I'm really excited to think about possibly what more one-on-one time with him could look like, and the focused experiences. I can refocus on just one age group again. I'm not having to think about, like, oh my gosh, like, I have a 1.5-year-old who's here who's needing this, and a 4-year-old who's here needing this. You know, I won't be as pulled. And I am feeling optimistic in terms of the conversations that have been happening and the work to sort of move forward with supporting the daycare center. So I'm feeling cautiously optimistic. And also, you know, hearing sort of the fears and the worries and saying, we're not there yet. I'm not discounting that at all. But right now, I'm going to stay in time, in place, working towards what can be worked towards. And then we'll see what presents as the months go on. But I feel very fortunate in the work that I have been doing has allowed me to be in a place where I can now come back to it and be in it, you know, in a fairly safe way.
What are your concerns for the kids that you work with?
My concerns for the kids that I work with. My concern is that my hope is that all of these next steps will continue to be able to move forward. My concern is that this generation of very young children and on up through teenagers and young people in their 20s, is this moving forward and then really maybe having to shut down and pull back again and moving forward. And, you know, I don't know what that's going to do to the psychology of the human being, you know, like, will these be considered traumas? Is this going to be what their life is? Like, are we experiencing this new era of the virus versus the human body, you know? So I'm worried that things will not settle for them. That's what I'm worried, that things will not settle for them and be settled. And I'm worried, my concern is that the adults were all so focused and concerned about what this is that we don't know, that we are so unstable. So how we offer support to children and young people, it's not as focused, right? And we're probably emoting our concerns and our distractions. And, you know, the thing with memory loss that we're all having, I'm like, that wasn't a part of it, how children understood their adults in their world. So I feel like we don't have as stable an adult base that the children look to for security. So I'm just, and to me, that's all very invisible, right? And we don't know, and we don't necessarily have information about those things from past pandemics, like how did it affect the person who became an adult in their adult form, having gone through that experience as a child, that they wouldn't have presented in them if they had had a different experience.
What is your level of concern for yourself?
I think one of the concerns, the level of concern for myself that I don't think about often, is that I really do worry about getting sick. I'm a single person. I'm a self-employed person. So in terms of having any kind of benefits, that if I got sick, I worry about being ill and cared for. I worry, concerns are also then about how do I earn a living and how do I support myself and take care of the business of my life. So those are things that I really don't think about a lot, but I have noticed that I do take pause because I have been very lucky in these past many months to not get sick, even though I've been out in the community to some degree, you know, with work with the youth center. I'd say that is one of my biggest concerns for myself. And I'm responsible also for care and support of my parents who winter in my home and who will be coming back. And that when they were here during COVID, it was my responsibility to be the person who went out and got groceries and got the things that we need and bring back. You know, and so that will be my experience again in November when they return, you know, is that my role will shift back to also the care of my parents on a daily basis versus long distance phone calls, FaceTime, how are you doing, check-ins and things like that. Yeah.
What are your hopes for the next period of months?
That we can continue as a community to work, you know, work together. And I'm feeling like people are kind of like on edge right now in a way that during the first few months of pandemic, I felt like we were all very aware that we had to be careful for ourselves, but we also had to slow down and be caring of those around us. Like even at the grocery store or the gas pump, people were just kind of like, hey, hi, you know, and like, oh, you go first. And now I'm noticing like people are charging ahead and people are getting like really in each other's faces and spaces, and that there's a sudden sort of rise in a lack of kindness and care. And so I guess I'm hoping that we can find that again in ourselves, because we're still in stress and we are going to continue to be in new and stressful places. And so if we can't just take a deep breath and say that we're really all in this together, let us be kind, let us work slowly, that is just going to be problematic. So I just hope we can remember that kindness and care. And that's like on a big national thing too, you know, like, I feel like every little, like within a family, within a neighborhood, within a municipality, within a, you know, just sort of radiating out from there, that like, if we can find it and hold it at home, then it will radiate out from there. So I hope that we can keep finding that in ourselves.
Okay, I think we should stop there. Thank you so much, Maya.
Thank you, Annalise.
I'm going to pause the recording, but I will still be here.